Effie takes both of us by the hand and, with actual tears in her eyes, wishes us well, thanks us for being the best tributes it has ever been her privilege to sponsor. And then, because it's Effie, and she's apparently required by law to say something awful, she adds, "I wouldn't be at all surprised if I finally get promoted to a decent district next year." Then she kisses us each on the cheek and hurries out. Overcome with either the emotional parting or the possible improvement of her fortunes. Haymitch crosses his arms and looks us both over. "Any final words of advice?" asks Peeta. "When the gong sounds, get the hell out of there. You're neither of you up for the bloodbath at the cornucopia. Just clear out. Put as much distance as you can between yourselves and the others, and find a source of water," he says. "Got it?" "And after that?" I ask.
"Stay alive,"
says Haymitch. It's the same advice he gave us on the train, but he's not drunk and laughing this time, and we only nod. What else is there to say? When I head to my room, Peeta lingers to talk to Portia. I'm glad. Whatever strange words of parting we exchange can wait until tomorrow. My covers are drawn back, but there is no sign of the red-headed Avox girl. I wish I knew her name. I should have asked it. She could write it down, maybe, or act it out. But perhaps that would only result in punishment for her. I take a shower and scrub the gold paint, the makeup, the scent of beauty from my body. All that remains of the design team's efforts are the flames on my nails. I decide to keep them as a reminder of who I am to the audience. Katniss, the girl who was on fire. Perhaps it will give me something to hold on to in the days to come. I pull on a thick, fleecy nightgown and climb into bed. It takes me about 5 seconds to realize I'll never fall asleep. And I need sleep desperately, because in the arena, every moment I give in to fatigue will be an invitation to death. It's no good. 1 hour, 2, 3 pass, and my eyelids refuse to get heavy. I can't stop trying to imagine exactly what terrain I'll be thrown into. Desert, swamp, a frigid wasteland. Above all, I am hoping for trees, which may afford me some means of concealment and food and shelter. Often there are trees because barren landscapes are dull and the games resolve too quickly without them. But what will the climate be like? What traps have the game makers hidden to liven up the slower moments? And then there are my fellow tributes. The more anxious I am to find sleep, the more it eludes me. Finally, I am too restless to even stay in bed. I pace the floor, heart beating too fast, breathing too short. My room feels like a prison cell. If I don't get air soon, I'm going to start to throw things again. I run down the hall to the door to the roof. It's not only unlocked, but ajar. Perhaps someone forgot to close it, but it doesn't matter. The energy field enclosing the roof prevents any desperate form of escape. And I'm not looking to escape, only to fill my lungs with air. I want to see the sky and the moon on the last night that no one will be hunting me. The roof is not lit at night, but as soon as my bare feet reach the tiled surface, I see his silhouette, black against the lights that shine endlessly in the capital. There's quite a commotion going on down in the streets, music and singing and car horns, none of which I could hear through the thick glass window panels in my room. I could slip away now without him noticing me. He wouldn't hear me over the din. But the night air's so sweet. I can't bear returning to that stuffy cage of a room. And what difference does it make, whether we speak or not? My feet move soundlessly across the tiles. I'm only a yard behind him when I say, "You should be getting some sleep." He starts but doesn't turn. I can see him give his head a slight shake.
"I didn't want to miss the party. It's for us, after all."